Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome, everybody, to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossoff. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
I know we've talked about this before, but I want to see a horror movie taking place in a water park because I want to see a lazy river chase. You know what I mean?
So, like Piranha 3D kind of thing?
Yeah. Were they in the lazy river?
There might have been something like that. People were floating around in inner tubes and being eaten apart.
Just imagine, right? You're like
floating down. Oh, no, it was part two. I mean, Piranha 3DD. That was the water.
You're floating down a lazy river, and like Jason's like 20 yards in front of you. And like you can't float to him, and you're trying to run away from him. So it's like you running away in a lazy river. And like he's slowly, you know, gaining on you. And you're just like, get away from me, Jason.
And you're both going against the current.
Yeah. Yeah. Get away from me, Jason. And then, like, some guy who's not paying attention whamps into you, and, like, you start going towards him, you know, like.
Actually, you know what I want to see? I want to see the inverse of that. I want to see a water park based on horror movies. Maybe, like, water, tide pool, the Jaws, water slide. I don't know.
That's right. The Hellraiser, it just drops you in, like, a tube.
Oh.
Wait, what would some good water? Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah,
the water would be colored blood.
Yeah, I love it. People would go.
John Lovegood, what's your favorite water park attraction?
Like the Jaws Revenge Tank.
Oh, really?
Or not Jaws Revenge. What was it? Was it Jaws 3D? The one where Quaid plays the.
Yeah, that's the third one.
Like Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's like a SeaWorld or something with Jaws in the tank. Like I gotta go that way.
You know, as I often do, I was thinking about Jaws the other day, and I think the worst death in the history of the world is you're riding on a banana boat and a great white shark murders you. Because like, how did Mark die? He was on a banana boat and a great white shark killed him. Wait, why was he doing on a banana? What? Did he pay to go on that banana boat that's like $15 for an hour? Yeah, he did. And a great white got him? Like, that'd just be the most like undignified death of all time. Like if I was on like a jet ski and a shark just like jumped up and grabbed me, like, all right, cool, you know, you're living life the extreme. But if you die on a banana boat, it just doesn't seem right.
It just didn't seem worth it, Dan.
Yeah.
Like, the article is going to sound demeaning. Like man in banana boat yeah. Eaten by shark.
How do you not write a demeaning article? With a banana boat involved, like I think it's impossible.
The writers would all be laughing about it. They're like, "Listen, it's a tragedy, but the guy was on a banana boat."
Yeah,
shark attacks banana boat. Tall Swedish man dies.
He probably had a margarita in his hand.
Two of them, like that guy from Jurassic World.
So you just mentioned Jurassic World. Piranha 3DD came into play. Jaws 3 came into play. All these sequels that have water scenes.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, we're coming up with lots of them. Wait, so
Deep Blue Sea?
Deep Blue Sea. LL right? Cool J.
Well, it's not a water park, but it's in, like, a lab.
It was a water park for us. It was buckets of fun.
Oh, yeah, there we go. You know what this, you know what this theoretical cinematic water park should be called?
What?
Water World. Oh yes,
it'll go out of business in 2 weeks.
Yeah. It'll take like $200 million to open, then it'll tank.
I think it could still be considered a bigger success than the actual movie.
Yeah. Wait, but you were right though. Sequels do tend to go to water parks or parks in general.
You know, Deadpool 2 already got announced. I hope that doesn't go to a water park though.
I kind of hope it does.
Yeah,
I want to see Deadpool in a water park.
Yeah. So I noticed something weird recently. So of all the movies Ryan Reynolds has done, this is going to be his first we'll call it live action sequel. Because in the Croods 2 is going to come out too, but this is going to be his first live action sequel. All that where he's in the original and the sequel.
Yeah, because he's like, he popped up in Blade Trinity. He popped up in X-Men Origins. Oh, yeah. Green Lantern tanked like a Sherman. RIPD was dead upon arrival.
This is like the first sequel, the first live action sequel where you saw him in the first and you're seeing him in the sequel. Like, and then like, but so I looked up Vin Diesel because we're going to talk about Vin Diesel today. And do you realize that like his next, if you look at his filmography and IMDb, his next like five movies are sequels. He's got The Last Witch Hunter 2 already got announced. Fast and the Furious 8, 9, and 10 are all announced with projected year release dates. Triple X 3 is coming out. And Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh, yeah.
And in between all those movies, there is not one non-sequel.
I think with Last Witch Hunter, we'll be talking about it later, but they greenlit the sequel before it came out in the theaters, and it didn't do that well. But I think they're just letting him make these movies because the Fast movies are such moneymakers. So, like, we got to keep Vin happy. Like, listen,
he's just paying for this out of pocket.
Yeah, they're like, Last Witch Hunter cost us $50 million and it made six, but we're just going to keep going because Fast and Furious, you know, it's a money machine.
So Fast and Furious, that's like investment banking. You expect to make a lot of money. Whereas this Last Witch Hunter, it's a lot like Vegas craps tables. It's a lot of fun, but you know you will be losing money. So this is Vin Diesel going to Vegas, and he's like, look, there's a tiny chance I'll win big, but we all know I'm coming home with empty pockets.
Yeah.
This is him just spending money on entertainment. He's just having some fun.
Right. I got the house money. I can do what I want.
Hey, speaking of coming home with empty pockets, let's answer some listener questions.
Good segue, Lazarus.
Yeah. Or empty peach jars. All right, so The first one is, this is from Dan Johnson, DJ, DJ Fatness, Dan. I call him DJ Johnson, but DJ is Dan Johnson. So basically calling him Dan Johnson Johnson when I call him DJ Johnson. Mm. So I'm just going to say DJ. His first question is, what is the best superhero film with only one villain? And I'm going to say obviously it's Unbreakable.
That was I came up with like three answers, and that's one of my answers.
And so for me recently, I've been like really, it doesn't matter what it doesn't really matter what I think, but I'm just getting tired of like Apocalypse and Doomsday and like Ultron and all these like movies with a billion villains in them, like Lex Luthor, Darkseid, blah, 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 blah. Like my favorite comic book movies are just like, or superhero movies are just kind of like Chronicle had one villain. I like Unbreakable. I mean, even Jeff Bridges with a goatee and Iron Man. Like, just give me one villain. Like, just and that allows the characters to build. It could be like Hans Gruber, and he can have like a cool crew around him. But for me, it's Unbreakable and Sam Jackson. I love the fact that he just slaughtered thousands to find one guy that won't break. I love it. I love that. And I really didn't see it coming. I think it's well done. I love his hair. I think he has some of the best villain hair in the market. So I'm going Unbreakable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only true like one villain movie I could even think of. I did a search online, man, for like villains in superhero movies, and almost all superhero movies have multiple villains. And I don't mean like henchmen. Like, okay, the original Batman, it was the Joker and his henchmen who never had much screen time, except for the one ninja guy who
Christopher Walken was in the second one. Never mind.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like that had the Penguin, it had Catwoman, it had multiple bad guys. But this, the original Batman had one real bad guy, but it didn't stand out as much to me. But when you do a search, almost all movies really have like two bad guys.
Yeah. Like Iron Man 2 had Whiplash and Sam Rockwell. Right?
Yeah. But that's like, just it did though. It's more than one bad guy. Green Lantern had two bad guys with really big heads.
Huge heads. One was just huge a big head. I guess like Fantastic Four had Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
But those movies are garbage pails.
Yeah, I guess it was just Dr. Doom.
But none of them are Unbreakable. So
But of course, if we're saying what the best superhero movie is with one villain, if you include the phrase, what's the best superhero movie, Fantastic Four kind of gets canned right away.
I think Unbreakable might, as years pass on, maybe, you know, there's obviously Iron Man, and I know there's the Batman, but I think Unbreakable is my favorite comic book movie, even though it's not based on a comic book. I think it's the best origin story. I think I love the idea of it.
Do you like it more than Batman Begins?
Yeah, I like it more than Batman Begins. I think just a lot of the, you know, I was always on the I've been on the Unbreakable bandwagon for 15 years because it wasn't that popular. So I've been like, now it's kind of becoming cool to like, but I've always backed it up. So when Dark, you know, and I don't know, maybe from working Comic Cons for so long and just hearing people talk, and now like with Deadpool and like Dark Knight Rises and Dark Knight, and people are just like, it's the greatest movie ever made. Why? Because. And if you say something bad about it, like, that's right. They're like, shut up. They're like, shut up. Shut up. You're a hater. You're just hating. It's like, no, I legitimately don't like this scene. And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. So I've soured on those. And when I watched them, you know, I loved them. But I think Unbreakable is my favorite. And then Punisher Warzone.
Elizabeth, for the win.
I don't know. I think it's hard coming up, you know, as you guys said, coming up with a superhero movie that only has one villain. I think the first one that comes to mind is, I mean, I know he started out as a comic book character. The Dread remake that came out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's her name? Lena Headey? Like, Mama. She was, I can't think of any other villain in that movie. Or, like, at least the main villain.
Yeah, she just had henchmen.
Yeah. So, yeah, Dredd, the original Batman, like Levin Good said, you just had the Joker. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Maybe one of the Superman movies, Superman 1 or 2.
2 had a bunch of them.
Yeah, it had like, what was it?
Man, what were their names? Kal-El or...
Oh, right.
Or, I don't know, those three people.
Yeah.
Well, Kal-El is Superman.
You're right. I'm not up to date on my Superman lore. All right,
yeah. You got to keep up on your House of L family tree.
Jor-El,
that was his Jor-El. Dad.
Purell,
that's skin cream.
Laurel,
that's hair product.
Laurel Canyon,
That's a movie with Christian Bale.
El Dorado,
that's a cartoon that makes no sense. Well, I don't even know how we got there.
Silverado,
that's.
That's either a truck or a Western.
Oh, do you have gone cross-eyed?
Oh, my God. All right, so the answer is El Dorado.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
All right, so the next one is, again, from DJ. I asked him for random questions, and he gave me, like, one solid one. Then the rest of them just went off, you know, pretty crazy, but here they are. So in Out Cold, is it really possible to open beer bottles by hitting the cap with your snowboard?
Look, if Vinnie Jones can open them with his eye sockets in Euro Trip, then I'm going to say yes.
I mean, I think a snowboard would be easier than skis. Like, while you're still attached is what I'm assuming. You know what I mean? Like, because skis, you got to, like, skis just seem like a lot of work. And you could, snowboards just seem like you could kind of clunk it. You know what I mean?
Look, man, the transporter can, like, do a flipping corkscrew in a car to use a crane hook to remove a bomb from the undercarriage. I'm going to say that they can use a snowboard to take off a bottle cap.
I'm hoping in Fast 8, Vin Diesel uses a tank Toyota hybrid, jumps, pops open a bottle of Corona, grabs it, cheers Kurt Russell while he's in a helicopter, and then they just drink.
Then throws a lime out the car door. Slices it with his hot muffler.
While he's in the air, and then they cheers Kurt Russell, and then he lands, and then he just cruises around in a tank, killing innocent motorists. You know, I was watching Fast 7 again, and they're like, we got to go back to our home turf. But by going back to their home turf to battle those drones and all those people, a lot of innocent cops and civilians are murdered. So they're like, we're fighting on our turf. But the people on their turf are probably like, hey, listen, please take this battle away from us. Like, go to the desert. Please fight in the – like, don't why are you coming into the middle of L.A.? Because it's your turf. Like, you're going to murder a lot of innocent cops. Like, a lot of cops died in that movie because they wanted to fight on their turf.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
It's like, leave these cops alone. Yeah. So, I mean, whatever. If I was in out cold, I bet those guys could do it. So, yes.
Look, if Zach can love...
Zach Galifianakis?
Yeah, if he can love a hot tub, loving it strong...
he can open it.
Then they can do that.
I like it.
If he can make love to a water jet, then yeah.
So the answer is hot tub time machine.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
All right. Thanks again to DJ for his wonderful questions. I think we kind of, sort of, not really answered your questions. So, yeah. Thanks once again.
If by answering, that means go off on a rant about Fast 7 and cop death.
Like, that never happens.
Yeah.
Next week. Good. What topic are we talking about this week?
Well, you know, just in the spirit of movies that are pure fun, I thought that today we would discuss two recent releases that are both based on dated Monster Slayers. And of those two movies, and in this case, it's the Monster Slayers themselves that are dated for the sake of my very abstract theme. The first one is The Last Witch Hunter, in which, well, Vin Diesel plays... You start laughing at Vin Diesel? I mean, really, this movie is all sorts of bonkers before we get into it. Like, I love this movie, but it is ridiculous. I mean, Highlander meets Constantine as this, like, Viking turned present day, or this Game of Thrones warrior to present day, is, like, cursed with immortality, eye roll, you know, to slay witches like Van Helsing for the remainder of his life.
And seduce flight attendants.
And seduce flight attendants. Wait, you know what? He's centuries... Isn't he from the 16th century?
Yeah.
So he's like 500 years old or something, or maybe it's 200, whatever it is. But he's super old, right? You'd think that he had time to work on these lines, and these lines seem no more honed than like Dominic Toretto, you know, after a bunch of these Fast and Furious movies conducting heists.
Well, let's say he's like a 1,000 years old. Like, he tried to get abstract like 500 years ago and realized that wasn't necessary. You know, like, maybe he's really honed it. Maybe he realizes that's all he needs to do.
And then, like, and then Michael Caine, who's like kind of like his sentinel, record keeper, advisor, sidekick, whatever, right? Called a Dolan. It's like a special word. Maybe it has a real context. He's basically saying it like, oh, look, another flight attendant. Do you not tire of this exhausting lifestyle?
Whenever I hear
Michael Caine, by the way.
Whenever I hear Michael Caine, I always think of the Trip where they do perfect impersonations of it. And I just annoy my wife all the time because I'm always trying to do a Michael Caine, but I do it terribly. Like, I can't. She was only 15. Like, I can't. I try to do it nasally.
Sounds like Paul Hogan.
Yeah, she was. Son of a bitch. She was. Damn it, I can't do it. I can't do it. She was only 15. I can't do it.
She's only 15. No, hold on, wait.
Yeah, see?
You started sounding like a country 15. Singer there last
she's
about.
She's only 15. Hold on. Why do we fall, Master Bruce? So we can learn to pick ourselves up. No. I need more time to work on it.
You sound like Bill Murray from Caddyshack.
You were only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
I don't know who the hell that is.
I don't know.
But it's not Michael Caine.
What's the point of doing all this bloody push-up if you can't even lift a log off?
Oh, my God. I don't...
That's,
Wait, I got... All right, here we go. All right, I got a channel nasal.
Okay.
She was only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. Nope, still can't do it.
Nope. I'm amazed you haven't started sounding like Eddie Redmayne.
It's like you can only do that impression at certain times of the day. When the humidity is like at the right percentage.
I need some Claritin before that's what I'm blaming. My nose is clogged.
Yeah.
I can't get the nasal.
That's true. All right.
So Michael Caine's his handler. Vin Diesel's name is Calder, of course. And he's a suave, immortal witch hunter. But Listen, we're
he's not that suave.
Well, in the wait.
He's pretty suave for Vin Diesel. He's a Vin Diesel suave.
Like he thinks he's suave.
He thinks he's suave.
Like he thinks he he's like Rico Suave, you know, just walking around. But listen, we're hating on this movie and justifiably so.
We love this movie, but we love this movie.
I had a lot of fun with it. And you know why I loved it is like it's based on a Dungeons and Dragons character that Vin Diesel came up with. Like this is based on a character he played with in Dungeons and Dragons. And what I like, I mean, it borrows heavily, but it's a new story. Like, this is a new movie with a new mythology, and I kind of like just cruising around with Vin Diesel while he's, like, witch hunting. Like, I enjoyed it. Like, I like the different worlds. I like the different characters. I like that terrible tree that I wouldn't want in my front yard. Listen to our podcast about trees. It built a new world, so I was able to roll with it. Like, it's a fun movie.
It's really fun, yeah. And the world building, while it's not like as honed as The Matrix or Harry Potter, or even John Wick, come to think about it.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I liked it. It was really rough around the edges, but I really liked what they were doing. And it resembled a lot of familiar things, don't get me wrong, but like all those familiar things were pieced together into something that didn't look anything like the things that were borrowed. A lot was borrowed from Constantine. Conceptual things were borrowed from Constantine, but it didn't look or feel like the Constantine movie. And that tree looked like the Game of Thrones tree. But yeah. That's it. That's all that felt like Game of Thrones.
I compare this movie to Carl Weathers from Arrested Development, where he doesn't like it when people throw away stuff. He's like, see this bone right here? Hmm. He's like, put this in some water, put some carrots, some stuff. You got stew.
Hey, like acting legend Carl Weathers.
Yeah, acting legend. So he's taking these old throwaway things and he's making stew. So, you know, there's a lot of familiar elements, but it's something new and it's something that I appreciated. Even, you know, like people, when I saw this, you know, there's like a bunch of stuffy critics in there, but everybody was smiling. Like everyone just sort of like, nobody left the theater annoyed. Like, they just kind of were like, you could go in there and cross your arms and not like it. But I don't know. I guess when it starts, I kind of like it. Like, Vin Diesel with a beard and a bunch of Vikings or Crusaders or whatever they are. What I like about them is they're these heavily armed, badass dudes, and they're about to go fight, like, the worst witch of all time and the worst tree of all time. So I was like, all right, these guys are brave. Like, they're going into certain death. Like, I respect people who go into certain death in movies. Does that make sense? Like 13 Assassins, Saving Private.
I thought you were going to go 13th Warrior.
Yeah, 13th Warrior, yep. And like, I like that. I don't know, for some reason I have a soft spot for people kind of going into battle. And I respected that in them. And then also I really liked, I guess we can work our way to the end, but I liked how Vin was immortal. Like, I thought that was a pretty good idea.
Well, you know, because all of his characters in his other movies, right, Dominic Toretto, Triple X, they're basically immortal in application. They do so many things that should kill them. And honestly, they survive more dangerous things than Calder does.
Yeah.
So, like, we just kind of said, like, look, Vin, you're always playing someone who can't die. So why don't we just, like, jump the shark here and have you play someone who can't die.
And I think that's perfect too, because you're right. He's basically becoming immortal. So just make him immortal. Like, I love that. Like, I thought that was a great idea. And I thought, I don't know, I liked, you know, my favorite parts in this movie weren't the action. It was just Vin Diesel cruising around with Elijah Wood doing detective work. Like, I was like, I like this. Like, they were going to these bakeries where they put bugs in the cupcakes.
Wait, what?
Something like that. And then they were like, cruising around, and there's all these rules, and then he talked about like what all the evil he's seen, and then he ends up at Rose Leslie Ygritte from Game of Thrones, and she's he shows up at her bar. She owns some like gin joint speakeasy where she serves like fizzy drinks to demons.
And it's, it's totally over the top, but only in ways that made me smile. This place, like when they go in this place where it's only witches, and witches are allowed to exist in this movie as long as their magic is kept a secret and their existence is kept a secret and they don't use magic on humans, right? But so you go in there, and like instead of candles or like light fixtures, it's swirling vortices of glowing magic above every little table. Like not one at the ceiling, right? No, one over every table, and every drink has some flowing ectoplasm of a different color, and they're referring to potions and, you know, like everything in there.
Yeah, you know how you like get a craft cocktail? We used to go to when we did Comic Cons, we had our friend Dave, and we go out with him, and he always get like the craziest craft cocktail, and we'd sit there for 5 minutes waiting for the bartender to make this a beautiful drink. But I feel like every drink in this bar took 10 minutes, so it'd be like I would order my drink, then immediately order another one. Because who knows when it's coming back.
So, by the way, have you guys – so this is based on, like, Vin Diesel's love of Dungeons & Dragons, basically, and the character on one of his characters. So have either of you guys ever played Dungeons & Dragons?
Actually, no. I was going to wait till a little bit later, but I haven't played Dungeons & Dragons, but I do watch this show by these guys called Critical Role. They're a very popular group of voice actors who get together every week for a game of Dungeons & Dragons. They're very popular on Twitch. But for promoting The Last Witch Hunter, Vin Diesel actually came on, and he actually played as his character from The Last Witch Hunter. And you can watch the video. It's like it's a one-hour video of the session. And I actually watched the whole thing, and it was entertaining. I still have
Flag on the play, Lass.
Yeah.
Flag on the play here. You said that he played his character from The Last Witch Hunter.
Yeah.
But his character from The Last Witch Hunter is Vin Diesel, is Dominic Toretto, is Triple X. Hey, but he plays himself in that.
But that's a role-playing game, right? You can kind of make it your own character, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's what he did. Like, he played as the character in that gaming session. It was amazing. I highly recommend watching that. It might be more entertaining than the movie.
and you know what I like is you can tell he loves this world, Levengood, right? Vin Diesel loves what he's doing in this movie.
Oh. So was it you, Mark, that told me that like when he was on the set of Chronicles of Riddick, he was trying to teach the Dame Judi Dench how to play Dungeons and Dragons or something?
Yeah, like he's a big nerd.
So there's a little over exposition in this movie, you know, like eye roll we say when they over explain things. But like there are scenes where he's kind of trying to teach the audience how magical items work in Dungeons and Dragons as opposed to how they work in fantasy movies without saying he's letting you know how a Dungeons and Dragons magical item works, right? Or how skills in that game work. He's like, do you know how to tell if magic has been used recently? And he like explains all these little cues. And to the D&D lovers out there, it's like a spellcraft check. And then like he says, you got all these elemental runes just right up against each other and you got to separate them. And then he does some little magic trick to separate them, like use magical device kind of trickery. And then at one point, there's a direct nod. It was almost like I expected him to break the fourth wall and look right at me in the audience where he says, Max is a 14th level warlock. And he says that, and they make no reference of level anywhere else in the movie. That one time he's like, look, I gotta make a reference to a high level character in this movie. And like, and I adore it. I played D&D tons when I was younger. But that was just gold, man. There are witches. There's a golem in it. There's all sorts of magical spells and effects. Like, this was pure gold to me.
Yeah, there's like hell portals. There's shadow walkers. There's fizzy drinks.
Like there's magic drinks. There's magical spells of all sorts. There are spells that conceal magical spells. There are methods to detect if magical spells have been used. Like, it's magic everywhere.
Yeah. And and then there's, you know, Elijah Wood is new to the game, so then he has to train Elijah Wood on what's going on. But that's a perfect way to get expository dialogue out of there. And then there's that tree that, like, draws the kid in. It doesn't have, like, candy on it.
Dude, it made me think of Hansel and Gretel, too, because there were gummy bears and everything looked so nice.
You guys are 12 years old. What tree would draw you in when you're 12?
Well, first off, a gummy bear off a sidewalk is not something I'm going to pick up to eat.
Yeah. But for me, it would be like when I was 12, like VHS tapes and CDs, because I was like buying, you know, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Pulp Fiction. So like if I walked by a movie tree, I would have been like, something's afoot, but I'm doing it. Like, I don't know. But I don't know. It's just for me, I like that it is an original story. I like that Vin Diesel's – it's a total ego project, but it's fun. He's earned it with the Fast movies. I don't know. Why not? Why not? Like that's probably, and I like the director, Breck Eisner. He did the Crazies remake, which I like trumpet a lot. I think it's a very good low-budget horror remake. So that a very capable director, Rose Leslie, you know, from Ye Grit, she's always likable. It's just a silly little film that's going to be great on HBO.
That's probably true.
I don't even remember how it ends, right? Doesn't like the witch queen, her tree starts growing, and then there's like a, and then she does something, and then he has a sword, but then he has to keep her alive because their immortality is together, and so she has to stay alive. They both have to stay alive to be, they both have to be immortal, right?
Well, so in the beginning, it didn't feel like that, right? In the beginning, he was in the act of killing her. She curses him with immortality. Mid-movie, or like two-thirds of the movie, and you find out she was bestowing the immortality to him so that when she was resurrected in the future, she could then reclaim that immortality and be immortal herself. And then, so, and then in the end of the movie, when he would have killed her, she's left this cindered mess, and her heart is still pumping. So it's like, yeah, now all of a sudden they're both immortal, but only her heart is alive. So it's like the this weird little I guess he can, one of them can be immortal while the other one's heart is immortal. How about that? That's the weird thing, like a talisman, like an omen of resurrection that could happen.
So I like there's always a threat of her coming back, but he's doing good work as an immortal.
Well, like, even if she won, for her to stay immortal, like, we don't know how this curse works, but does she have to keep his heart around until, like, the followers of him come find the heart and resurrect him? And it doesn't really matter to me. I think it's all in good fun.
I'm hoping for a Last Witch Hunter Constantine mashup.
So, this basically is a Highlander Constantine mashup, but then with like witches and stuff, like in Dungeons and Dragons themes.
I don't want Christopher Lambert. I don't want Christopher Lambert. I can't even do a Christopher Lambert.
You sound
tonight.
Like the same angry elderly Jewish businessman that you always.
What's Christopher Lambert? I'm Christopher.
Hey,
Lambert.
Mark, do a Christopher Lambert meets Michael Caine.
Oh gosh!
Yeah,
the universe is gonna implode.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
She was only 15. Right?
Wait, who's that?
I don't know which one of them that was supposed to be.
Was that Christopher Lambert?
He never talks loud. Have you ever heard Christopher Lambert speak loud? Like, in all of his movies, he's always like, that's me. What?
Doesn't sound anything like him.
In that movie Beowulf, he goes, Beowulf?
Beowulf?
So you were mentioning the ending, by the way. Like, I don't necessarily feel like I want to stop talking about this, but because you brought it up, like the ending where they all but say in the dialogue, yo, everybody, expect a sequel. like they already knew. Like when they were filming it, they already had a go picture for part two. So they're like, so we have to keep her heart around forever as long as for me to live? No, I will end myself and we will end the witch. And then like she says, when I was in the dream world, I saw things that were worse than her.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting for a world without you. Oh, well, I guess I'll stay. And like,
I don't know what is worse than a terrible witch queen with a huge tree and plague flies. Like, it doesn't get worse than that. So what is worse than her? Like what?
Well, he played Dungeons and Dragons though, right? So now you might not understand the numbers here, but when he says 14th level warlock, back in the day, that was high. It's not high anymore to new D&D, but to old school Dungeons and Dragons, 14th level was scary, right? And back then you could fight like a witch or a hag, but that would have been easy for a lot of 14th level characters. But, like, there were demons in the game, too. So maybe in the next movie, there's a demon or a dragon. Or in Dungeons & Dragons, there were even undead dragons. So, like, it could be some of that stuff.
But none of that sounds as scary as a terrible witch who has a plague tree with plague flies.
Dude, man, this could be an undead dragon with an arboretum full of plague trees that have plague roaches, plague ants, plague bedbugs, plague lice.
Limited, are you flipping through the monster manual right now? That's what it sounds like.
I'm not, but I won't lie. I have a closet filled with these books. That's all taller right. than me.
The only thing that I can think of that's scarier is the troll from Ernest Scared Stupid. If that came
with,
out...
With wings and the plague times 1,000 coming out of a beehive.
Oh, gosh.
So, as an entomologist, I want to say something, but as a movie fan, I have to realize it was complete malarkey from the start. But why were these flies coming out of what looked like a yellow jacket nest? Like, you don't have to be a scientist to know, like, if you've lived on this planet long enough, you're like, I've seen something that looks like a bee's nest or a yellow jacket nest or a hornet nest. Has anyone ever heard of a fly nest?
How many people do you think would notice that, though?
At least one.
And how many of those people do you think it would actually bother? Yeah.
I was working on a reality television show. I'm not going to say the name, but they needed an Eastern diamondback rattlesnake, but they had a Western diamondback rattlesnake. And the guy had to kill it. Like, he had to chop off its head.
Oh, no.
And then there was a big argument on set where, like, people are going to know that this is a Western diamondback and not an Eastern. And then the producers are like, no, they won't. And if they do, it's like one person.
Yeah, but, okay, if you ask everyone who went to see that, like, yo, can you tell the difference between an Eastern and Western rattlesnake? You get a very different number of positive answers than if you ask someone, yo, flies, do they come out of bees' nests?
Yeah. Man, fly bees, that'd be the worst. They suck your blood and sting you?
So I've got a question because I have lots of answers. So, like, what was not in this movie that you would have liked to see in this movie? And don't say better writing. I mean, like creatures or magical effects of some sort or a certain kind of bad guy. Like, what kind of monster or something would you want to see that you didn't see?
Well, I didn't like the right-hand man of the witch, that big guy with the beard.
Balthazar.
Like, yeah, Balthazar was the most nondescript. Like, I would have liked something a little bit more Constantine-y. Like, this guy...
But they gave him two names in this for almost no reason. So they gave him the name Belial, which is the name of one of the devils. It's a biblical devil name, and it's also a Dungeons & Dragons devil name. But then they also said he goes by Balthazar, which was the name of the bad guy sort of in Constantine.
Yeah, he just looked like a big dude with a beard. Like, he was not threatening at all.
He had better magic, but, like, we kind of had to be told that he was more powerful, like, to understand it.
Like, I would have liked something more... I don't know, like maybe like a woman or like a
sex woman in leather.
Yeah, no, like,
yeah,
like just something. This guy, he was just like a big burly dude with a beard, and like I was like, I don't like him. I mean, I think the first time I saw him on the screen, I'm like, I don't like him. I mean, nothing against the actor; he's probably a great guy. Great.
He looks like the lackey that gets his ass kicked.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm like, why should I care that he is, this guy, like, so he was really nothing to me. But I don't know, maybe what would I have? That's a good question. You should have sent me that like yesterday. I probably could have thought about it. What about you? What would you answered? I'll think.
Like I would have loved a lot of things. I'm glad that there was no kind of undead monster in it because we see plenty of that. I'm really glad there was no dragon, right? Even if it was a spell effect, because we see that all over the place. Yeah. Right. But I was still kind of hoping for some kind of traditional Dungeons & Dragons monster that isn't oft seen in movies, like a manticore or, like,
A bubble ray?
A what?
A bubble ray?
I don't know what a bubble ray is.
I just made it up.
I would have wanted to see something – even if it was an obscure one that only the Dungeons & Dragons fans would know, like something with tentacles. I liked how they made the plants lash out kind of like in a tentacular way, but I would have liked to see a tentacle monster at some point deep in that prison where they're holding the witches that's like another kind of guard-keeping sentinel monster that he has to fight or – I would have liked, you know, just a little more diversity in the monsters. They had the budget. I mean, there were spell effects all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, like, I would have liked some other kind of, like, monster that was, you know, an atypical thing. Like, so, that weird little bone golem thing that they had.
Let me go. I have to ask, which is a better Dungeons & Dragons movie? This one or Dungeons & Dragons?
Dungeons & Dragons is the worst Dungeons & Dragons movie ever made. You know, I heard somewhere that they're going to make another – they're going to take another shot at that. And they're going to try and make it more serious.
Well, the new Warcraft movie is coming out, so that might have spurred development on that. So,
right. No, but I mean, like, something called Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh.
But okay. I think Warcraft will be cool.
Yeah.
You know what I think this movie needed more of? It needed more denim shirts.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, too many tailored suits. Like, I picture a witch hunter wearing a lot of denim. If I was a witch hunter, I'd be wearing Canadian tuxedos all day.
Exactly.
You know, someone who's, like, scamming on flight attendants for, well, I guess I can't say hundreds of years, just for as much time as we've had planes. So, like,
60. And before that, trains, and then before that, boats.
Yeah, and, like, way back with just bar wenches, I guess. But, like, he was, he must have been really wise with his savings. Either that or he's selling artifacts on the black market. Yeah. He had, like, the nicest place ever.
Yeah, I don't.
And it's right over Central Park.
I don't get how, like, in movies, they're like, vampires are rich. Why are they rich? Because they're old. But how do they work? They just do. Like, do they hoard? Like, how don't, like, I always picture, like, if I became a vampire, I would probably try to work in, like, a blood van, or I would get a night job. Like, I couldn't just live in a house. Like, you have to pay rent. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I don't.
They're operating under this notion that, like, because they have more time, they can save more efficiently. But just because it's like, not like all vampires are going to be able to magically save money wisely. Like, there are plenty of people who struggle financially into old age, or who suddenly become poor as they get older. So it's not like being alive forever makes it so easy to, I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Maybe they've been buying the lot. I mean, they've more time to win the lottery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think he sold artifacts. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Like, maybe it's kind of like he's selling them to the witch council.
Yeah.
Like, or maybe he's getting some kind of a bounty.
Like, he's doing it ethically.
Yeah, it's got to be on the up and up.
Well, here's a question. If he was immortal, maybe he didn't have to eat? Maybe that's how he saved so much money over the years?
I mean, that would save money.
Yeah. I mean, like...
Well, because we know that he can suffer. Like, he feels pain. So if he was hungry all the time, that'd be bad.
But he wouldn't die.
Maybe like 50% of the time. He eats every other day.
Yeah, why not? You know, hit up the dollar menu like every other day. You can save a lot of money.
5 for $4.
Yeah. It'll last me a month.
So, and, more drop kicks. He should have dropped. Like, he should have. I wish he would have done a Hansel and Gretel witch hunter, because they, like, blow up witches and spin kick them and blow them up and destroy them. I wish there's a scene where, like, a witch is just, like, standing, like, so it's a big wide shot, right? And there's just a witch standing in the middle of the screen, when out of nowhere, these 2 feet come out of just thin air and just blast the witch into oblivion. Could be a male, could be a female.
Like, a magical portal opens up right next to her, and Nightcrawler drop kicks her.
Yeah, he's a jumper, and a witch just gets just obliterated with a two-foot jump kick.
From Hayden Christensen.
Yeah. So denim and spin kicks, that's what I want more of.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled that they're making a part two. Again, like, I could write thousands of words making fun of this movie, but for every word that makes fun of it, I've got 5 words that love it.
Yeah, I love this movie. And it was made by someone who wanted to make it, I think, for pure reasons. There is ego involved, but this guy loves the subject matter. It tells a newish story. Let's have more of that. Let's bring him up. Bring it on.
And so people know, like, this isn't me, like, laughing about some bad horror movie that I typically review. Like, I cannot wait to buy this on Blu-ray to watch more over again. Whereas with those bad horror movies, I buy them, but it's because they're so obscure, there's no other way for me to watch them. And then I usually never watch them again, or I find someone on Facebook to send it to for free. So, like, this really was a load of fun.
Yeah. I like the chemistry with Rose Leslie and Vin Diesel, and it's just, I don't know, I dug it. I had a fun time with it. But for, you know, I was able to kind of, you know, strap myself down into the water slide and enjoy the ride.
Can we take a moment to appreciate, by the way, like, Vin Diesel is now, like, if he's not yet, sometime this year, he turns 49. He was born in 67. So he's like 48, 49 years old. He's got all these sequels I mentioned, right? Like Fast 10 is supposed to come out like in 2021 when he will be in his 50s. It's slowly turning into an Expendables movie.
Like, yeah.
So, like, I mean, I think it's great, but this is a lot of ambition for someone who's that old.
He'll be fine. He lives his life a quarter mile at a time.
That's right. And he just drinks Corona, keeps the weight down. Yeah. Actually, I don't think he's ever drank Corona in his life, watching him the way he drinks it. I was watching it in Fast 7. I'm like, that would blow up in his face.
Oh.
But no, I'm serious, man. I know I talk about this a lot, but the way he drinks Corona would, like, any, like,
he whips it so fast too.
Yeah, he pops it up. He doesn't even move his head. He keeps his head looking straight. Imagine somebody looking at you, taking a beer and flipping it, and so like the beer goes
you just stick out your lower lip a little bit.
Yeah. And then he pops it down like really fast, and then holds it by the neck. That Corona would be spilling everywhere.
Hey, Mark, before we go on break, can you do a quick scene of Michael Caine drinking a Corona?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for this Corona. And I did not give it to her. She was only 16. Okay.
I swear to God, you sound like Sean Connery trying not to sound like Sean Connery.
But I'm drinking this Corona.
Yeah.
I'm in the beach.
You would know Corona if it slapped you right upside. I can't do it either. I can't do it. Like, you know, like right upside the head. Like, he says that stuff because he's British.
She was only 16.
While we're practicing our Michael Caines, why don't we take a quick break real quick? Yeah. Later.
When I say pod, you say
pie.
Wait a minute.
Whoa. What's going on, Kyle?
Take your headphones off real quick.
Okay, sorry.
John, what the hell is this?
Oh, I don't know. Robert invited me over.
I don't know. This is kind of awkward. Are we doing like a promo or something?
I don't know. I wish he'd put on his pants, though.
Yeah, he's like dancing around. He's talking about Shark Dropper.
I think he's looking for the baby oil.
Anyways, Robert, what are we doing? Huh? What are we doing?
What was that?
What are we doing?
I can put my headphones back on?
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing a promo for Shark Dropper.
Oh, okay.
That podcast we do that has improv, and we just talk about our daily lives and stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I still wish you'd find your pants.
Where can I find it?
Oh, wait. Are we supposed to wear sharkdropper.com?
Short shot time.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks, and we still haven't nailed our Michael Caines. I think we're getting closer, though.
I don't know what you're talking about. I nailed it. Wait, what was that?
Yeah.
That wasn't even like an English accent.
Again, you're going Paul Hogan from Crocodile Dundee.
That's not a knife. That's more
Crocodile
like John
Dundee
Wayne.
That it's going to be The Rock.
I can do Sean Connery. I can Connery it up.
Hold on, wait. Whatever. Maybe this is the secret. If we want to do a Michael Caine impression, we have to do an impression of somebody else. So do an impression of Sean Connery. Intentionally.
Hey, Money Penny. She was only 16. I can't do it.
You had it for like a second.
Yeah, I think I did. I think I.
You were just like doing 00 Dundee. Transitioned at the end.
I'm like the Flight of the Conchords. Sometimes when I freestyle, I lose confidence.
You know, all this impression talk reminds me of that joke from Parks and Recreation when they were like trying to figure out how do you do an impression of Nev Campbell? It's a party of five.
She moves her head a lot. She kind of does like a.
Yeah.
She squints her nose a lot, like a little like chipmunk.
Yeah, she's a cutie.
Yeah. You know, there's a Roger Ebert review. She was in a movie with. I read his books. Like, I hated this movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. And one of those. Or I really just. I think I hated this movie. And he was writing a review about the movie she was in with Matthew Perry about where. I don't remember what it was about, but. He was like, I'm not even going to talk about this movie. And he spent the entire review talking about how pretty Nev Campbell is. I'm like, damn, Ebert, like, you're married. Like, but he spent the whole review writing about Neve Campbell and like, how much he loves her.
Yeah.
I've read like thousands of his reviews, and I'm like, I've never read this before. He like, his favorite person was Neve Campbell.
Yeah. She's got that classic girl next door look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you should read, I'll find the review, send it over to you. But I was like, geez Louise.
How do you do a review of that book, though? What's like a review of reviews? It's too meta for me.
Reviewing his reviews.
Yeah.
Reviewing his bad reviews.
Reviewception.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Let's bring it back, kind of, and answer another listener question.
Yeah, and this one is from Dan No Pants Johnson again, a.k.a. DJ, a.k.a. DJ Johnson, a.k.a. Dan No Lie Johnson.
Oh, yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah. And this one is, and we asked for random questions, why is there no Crouching Tiger Hidden Figure Skater?
I maintain that there is, because I saw Blades of Glory. Mm. And so I think that when they showed the test footage, the old, like, footage from China when the figure skater does that iron lotus
yeah. and
cuts off the partner's head. Yeah. I'm saying that the partner that did the head cutting was in fact Crouching Tiger Hidden Figure Skater.
So you're saying that was like a conspiracy. They made it seem right. like an accident.
It was an assassin. And then later it turns out that that figure skater was the girl assassin at Samuel L. Jackson's side in The Kingsman.
Oh my goodness. Ooh. She was brutal.
Yeah, with those prosthetic legs.
What I liked about her is she sliced a dude in half and saved the Dalmore. Like, she saved the beautiful glass of scotch while chopping somebody in half. I think
that
you
actually mentioned that in the last three episodes, saving the Dalmore.
I am so impressed by that, because if that, like, in when the Macallan 50 got spilled in Skyfall, I almost died. So I was happy that she saved the Dalmore 62. But, all right, so I think figure skaters are capable of amazing grace and moves and pirouettes. But the laws of physics and gravity in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I just don't see somebody with ice skates running through trees. Like, they would get their blades stuck in a tree. It would be very, like... Have you ever seen somebody, like, they look great while on ice, but I don't think I've ever seen somebody try to run with skis on, or what do you call them? Skating?
Ice skates.
Oh,
I remember wearing those, and when you're walking your way to the ice, you feel like you're about to break your ankle.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, for me, like, you know, they would have to live on a, like, Hoth, or like, and is that Hoth? Like, they would have to live on an ice planet.
What's Hoth? What are you referencing?
That's from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, the ice planet.
Okay. Yeah, and so, like, I don't, like, once they get into, like, the forest, like, they're not going to be of any use to you. Like, I don't know. I would love it if a trained assassin tried to chase me while wearing ice skates.
They would kill their own ankles. They just they just hobble themselves.
Like, 20 yards down, I would hear, snap, snap, then I hear, ah! So for me, it's like maybe in an ice planet, they would rule supreme. Hmm. Or like in Batman and Robin, like those skaters he had. But
even on an ice planet, though, it falls apart. Because imagine you're wearing these heavy ice skates, right? Okay, you sit down, you want to cross your legs. It's heavy, so you don't lift your leg enough, and you cut off your own foot because it's heavy, so it doesn't lift as high as you thought it would. Yep. And then it crosses over your shin. You're just cutting yourself up. I don't think it's gonna. I mean, unless the people on this planet have huge quadriceps,
and if you're running through the trees, everyone's like, if I was running through trees barefoot, people might not know where I am. But if I'm running through trees with ice skates on, branches, leaves are going to be falling down. Everyone's going to know where you're at.
In Crouching Tiger, they were, in fact, flying. They even call it that in the movie. So, you know, it's no longer about running and jumping with them.
Yeah.
Like, they're just gliding through. They could be, like, on shears, just cutting off branches as they glide through.
It's just, I don't see grace with someone flying through the air while wearing ice skates.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. Aren't they making a sequel to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Yeah,
it's on, like, Netflix.
Oh, come on. Is it already out?
Nah, the 28th or something.
Okay.
I would love to see Tanya Harding as a villain. Oh, gosh.
She's just flying through the woods, these mountainous woods with a billy club.
Whacking knees left and right.
Ding, ding, she ding, just, ding. Like, comes up from behind. Bang!
She's like El Kabong.
Oh, is it too soon for that? The
joke about that? No, go for it.
Yeah. I think we're good. I think that was like 1993, It's kind of like an OJ joke. It's all fair game by now.
The 20th century is fair.
That's weird to say.
There we go. No, I mean, I like your theory, John. I think that could be possible, but in my head, it just all looks silly to me.
They still need large quadriceps, though, because once they sit.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the quads, they're legit, but they kind of remind me of like that movie Mystery Men, Dane Cook. He was the waffler. Like, he's like the guy that he could be great, but he just has a terrible gimmick.
Didn't he just burn someone's face with that thing?
It wasn't like, you know, he could have been great with that waffle, but it's still like, nah. Yeah. So that's the way I look at these ice skate crouching tigers. What do you think, Michael Caine?
I agree.
That's a bunch of malarkey. That doesn't sound anything like him either.
Yeah. Wait, he went Irish.
That sounded Irish? I don't even know what I said.
You're a burning turn, Michael Caine. Wait, no, that's Swedish.
All right, so final verdict on that question. Final verdict on that question is that we still can't nail the Michael Caine impersonation. Still trying, though. Still trying.
Yeah.
Thanks again for that question, DJ. And Livinggood, what's the second movie we're talking about today?
So our second dated monster killer movie it's got Jane Austen love affairs. It's got British classism and gender roles. It's got zombies and it's got Shaolin Kung Fu. We did Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and I, for one, absolutely adored everything about it.
It is adorable.
I think they did very well, though. Unlike The Last Witch Hunter, like, everything in that, like, in my opinion, was laughably awesome for the most part. Like, I was kind of snickering through a lot of it, even though I was appreciating it. This, like, the humor is deliberately tongue-in-cheek. So you giggle a lot, but the giggling is because you're seeing Jane Austenian dialogue delivered in the middle sometimes of fights and while slaying zombies. And then every now and then they even mesh a zombie comment with like what sounds like classy dialogue. What is it like? It's a century old fact that a zombie in the possession of brains is in want of more brains.
Yeah. It's like very just like dry. It's a very like, but it's like, they didn't want to make it, so don't think of this as like a farce or a spoof.
And it's not a horror comedy, but it's funny.
Yeah.
Consistently.
And like, it's very dry. Like, there's a scene where Lena Headey, Cersei from Game of Thrones, or Mama from Dread, she has an eye patch, and the Mrs. Bennet looks over at her and goes, "Nice eye patch. Is that functionable or fashionable?" And Lena Headey's like, "Functionable." Like, it was cute. And what I like the most is I like a lot of the actors involved. And so this tells the classic story of the Bennet sisters. You know, of course, they're getting married off to suitors, and their mom wants to marry them off to rich suitors. But they're also just a lower middle class family. So instead of them training in Japan, they train in China. And the rich people laugh at the people who train in China. However, I can't believe I'm saying this, but like China, they say the wise train in China. So the Bennet sisters, they all trained in China in the arts of zombie killing. And these zombies are smart. They use tricks. They don't turn into full-fledged zombies until they finally taste brain. So let's say I become a zombie. I could stay in like a gross, putrefied state as a normal person until I ate brains, and then I wanted to eat more people. But, you know, you have Darcy. And then my favorite part of the movie, I don't know what you think, John, but I'm a huge Doctor Who fan. And
That Matt Smith, the bumbling.
Yeah, he was Collins, Mr. Collins. And he was hilarious. Like, you know, being a big Doctor Who fan, just listening to him talk about scones and watch him like having a good time dancing. Like,
it's just fun. Like, and I don't know. For like, I went and watched this with my wife, and we just really enjoyed it. It's like 43% on Rotten Tomatoes, which isn't terrible. It bombed in the theaters because I don't really know what the audience for this movie is, because it's not a horror movie. It's not a sweeping romance film. So it's like a very – I think they're almost – their success cost them box office big time. But I do think it's going to find an audience eventually. But no, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I liked Lily James. She was in Cinderella and Downton Abbey. I think she's like very nice. Like the weirdest part for me though was like you know, so Lily James is Elizabeth and then Bella Heathcote is Jane. And so Jane in the book is the really pretty one, whereas Elizabeth is kind of like the plain one. But you're watching all these actors be like, yeah, Lily James, she's just kind of plain. And you're like, no. So that was like the weirdest part for me. But
it's like she's plain because you said it out loud.
I'm like, I'm like, how so? But I don't know. I like that these actors too, like they weren't winking at the camera, but they looked like they were having fun. So for me, that was kind of infectious.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it was so when I first heard about this movie, the first thing that came to mind were movies like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer, things like and Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters almost came to mind for this even more than The Last Witch Hunter, to be honest. And so I thought that they were going to, like we said, that it clearly didn't satirize or farcify, if you will, the Jane Austen novel. And in no way did it do that. Like, I think that my friend's wife is a huge Jane Austen fan, or my cousin's wife, that is. I think that she would like this movie. And the other thing is that there's abundant action, right? Abundant. There is abundant CGI and makeup effects for like, you know, decrepit, oozy zombies at some point. There's like a snot bubble of rot coming out of one's nose. But at the same time, like, well, that's a little gross, and some women listening might be like, yeah, that's not for me. That's not my Jane Austen. There's no like there's no real flesh tearing and gut ripping and tearing people apart kind of gore.
I mean, yeah, it's PG-13.
Yeah, like so all that stuff is kind of isn't there. And yet I was still very pleased with it as a zombie movie, even though that wasn't there. I didn't realize it wasn't there until the movie was over.
Yeah, and like there were some good zombie visuals as well, like the zombie mom with the zombie baby.
Oh yeah, that was creepy as hell.
Yeah, like, and they set up traps and but no, and then you have the class of like Wickham, you know, the bad guy there. And but one thing I'm thinking is I really enjoyed it, and I would definitely watch it again. But when you look at like what's that, Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunter? That movie made $250 million worldwide, which still boggles my mind. But this movie is really not doing well at the box office. Do you think in its effort to, like, not be a farce or a spoof or R-rated or bloody or gory or feature, like, this is Megan approved, but, like, feature, like, a ton of Jim Arterton butt shots? like, that's all that movie was, like, Kickboxer with JCVD. So, but, like, do you think that hurt it? Do you think that hurt the box office?
I want to say no, though, because in the trailer you see the girls lifting up their dresses – and they're in their cute thigh highs, and you see some skin when they're tucking the blades up there. So it almost hints that something like that is there, and you don't know that it's not going to be gory from the trailer.
Yeah,
and you don't know that you don't know that it's going to be more tame and serious necessarily from the trailer.
Yeah, it looks pretty action packed from the trailer.
Yeah, like, so I don't think that's what hurt it. I think what hurt it is that even a crazy gorehound zombie fan might be affected, like, it's a Jane Austen thing. Maybe I'll see it on Netflix.
Yeah, this is going to be a big Netflix movie, I have a feeling.
And let me tell you something else. No matter how good the trailer looked, I had no idea this would have been so cinematographically beautiful. So and the wardrobe and the sets were, I mean, it wasn't quite of the budget of Sherlock Holmes, but I mean, they really went for it with the wardrobe department and everything. I thought this movie was beautiful.
Yeah, the guy who wrote it, and well, Seth Graham Smith wrote the book, which this is going to sound weird, but I took a women in lit class in college because I was a lit major, and I read the book.
And then I bought Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, but this, I'm not trying to sound gross, but it like sat in my bathroom for a long time, like unread. But the guy who directed this, he directed Igby Goes Down, which I really liked a lot. And then he also directed 17 again.
Yeah, that's why I knew I'd like it. He was behind Zac Efron for two movies.
Yeah, but like that's like, you know, not Charlie St. Cloud, but 17 again was a fun little movie. And so this guy kind of knows how to direct. It's just such a weird movie. Like Natalie Portman was supposed to be the star. The budget was supposed to be huge. It was supposed to be R-rated. Then it kept getting pushed back. And then now she produced it and it went to PG-13. But I don't know. It was still fun. Like I was reading a movie review where the guy was like, for a while, I actually forgot that zombies weren't in Sense and Sensibility, like, or Pride and Prejudice. I'm sorry. Like he actually was like, these zombies work in this movie. So I don't know. It was fun. I liked it. I like that Tywin Lannister was the dad.
Two people from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, like him and his daughter. Yeah, and like I don't know. I liked, you know, the ending shot was pretty iconic. I liked the idea of, I don't know. I just love zombies, man. Like I used to, you know, I still walk around like Home Depot and I'm like, how would I fortify myself if there were zombies? So like, I guess I'm down for any zombie film. But I don't know. I like these zombies. They were suitably dangerous. I still don't know why they do house parties, but like, it was just it was a cheeky little movie. And there's a fly scene. So Mr. Darcy, he's a vampire, not vampire. He's a zombie hunter, and his way to find zombies is he lets these flies loose, and then the flies, once they find the undead, they go silent. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So
because they land,
yeah. But in the book. What is it? Jane gets sick. I think it's Jane. No, that's the main one. What's her name? What's the sister's
name? One of the daughters.
Yeah. Yeah. Jane gets sick. And then she has to stay at, Bingley's house. And, in this one though, they kind of thought that she got bit by a zombie, but her gun backfired. And, Mr. Darcy lets the flies loose to see if she was bit. And then, Elizabeth Bennet, Lily James catches them all. Like I don't
know. Mr. Miyagi style.
Yeah, she's like catching all the flies. Like this is so weird. I'm talking about this Pride and Prejudice where they're catching flies during a zombie detection scene.
So, I want to backtrack a little bit. You mentioned the PG-13-ness of this. This might be one of the movies where if in fact they kept it as it was or whatever, left some things in that they cut out for PG-13. If they made this R, it might have done better because then the horror fans might not have been discouraged with the Jane Austen-ness.
Yeah. I think being R would have brought in another $5 million. Because, I mean, movies like The Gallows bring in, like terrible found footage movies bring in, $15 million the opening weekend. So I think that hurt it a little bit. But it's still fun, though. But it's still fun. Like, I enjoyed it.
So we are today, 7-8 days since its release date in theaters. And when I looked about an hour before we podcast, there were only 9 reviews on Amazon for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which is stunningly low for a movie that you expect to be, like, awesome. You know, movies have 9 reviews after their opening weekend and then almost a whole week afterwards. Movies like The Gallows, which make more money, but people aren't like stoked to get online and be the first to review it on Amazon. Whereas like the more popular movies obviously get like 100 in the opening weekend. This has 9.
Yeah. And so it's only made $7 million worldwide so far.
Jeez.
Yeah. Wow. But the budget is $28 million.
Okay, I would have figured it was higher, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, they stretched that. I mean, $28 million. I mean, it's still a lot of money, but like, you know, if you think about Captain America 3, some of these movies are $300 million. So to stretch like a period zombie film to $28 million, that's impressive.
I'll bet that it'll make $28 million in like the 5 or 7 years once it hits like DVD and Blu-ray.
I mean,
I think it'll make it just on that.
It still has to be released in the UK because that's, you know, most of these people know these actors. And I mean, if you know, you know, Doctor Who, Downton Abbey, Game of Thrones, that'll bring you in. And then it hasn't been released in China yet or Korea. So some of the bigger markets. So
I think it has a it'll make its budget back. But no, guys, just take your brain out and enjoy it. Like it's not done badly. It's directed well. It's acted well. The acting is it's commendable. I mean, Lily James is always good in stuff. Sam Riley's good. It's fun. I don't know. I was reading these reviews. I watched that movie The Voices with Ryan Reynolds, and I went online to Rotten Tomatoes to just read reviews for it. And what annoyed me was on a lot of the reviews, like, it's not an instant classic, or another review is like, it's not a perfect film, or it's not the greatest film ever made. And it's like, these movies aren't made to be the greatest movie ever made. Like, they're meant for entertainment, and that's what this movie is, and it's very successful at that. You know when critics do that, though? Like, they watch Jaws 4, and they're like, it's not the greatest movie ever made. Well, of course it's not. I think that's such, like, a weird trope in reviewing.
It's something part four.
But you know what I mean? Like, so many, like, The Voices, they're like, it's not the best movie ever. But it's like, well, it's not trying to be the best movie ever. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies isn't trying to do that. It's a good little movie. It's a fun movie. My review is coming out tomorrow, but I just enjoyed it. As a fun experience in a cinema or at home, it is worth your time.
So here's something. Now, this isn't a negative criticism of the movie, because all the decisions that the characters made, I kind of understand. But in this movie, there was a faction of zombies that were living like regular people, because evidently if they consumed pig's brain periodically, as they were using it as the communion in their undead church, if they consumed pig's brain, it would suppress their desire for human brains that would ultimately make them probably go insane until they eat a human and then fully transform, right? So, but they were doing this evidently in the movie for generations, because this is a long-standing thing. This isn't something that's only been going on a couple years in the movie. So they've been doing this for a long time, and Darcy spikes their pig brain punch with human brains to make them go mad. And
because, in spite of one guy.
Right. But the thing is that even if it wasn't for that one guy, Darcy has seen so much horror that he might just be thinking also in terms of, look, on a long enough timeline, they're going to slip and it'll all go bad, and it'll go bad when we've accepted them or something. So we can't risk it. We have to eliminate them or something. But the movie didn't present it that way. The movie presented it as, no, those are zombies. I'm going to spike this. They're going to reveal what they really are. And that seemed like, whoa, it's not a solution, but there was a peaceful outcome in there. It's just that the peaceful outcome was led by this guy who, as it turns out, had a history of douchebaggery and malfeasance in his life. He evidently was linked to the death of Darcy's dad, and then there was some shady stuff going on with some would-be brides, and then he's kidnapping people, and he's a bad guy. But that was kind of weird to me that it wasn't identified like, look, eventually they'll go mad, or maybe, you know, like.
Yeah,
I felt bad for those zombies.
I thought it was a real jerk move. I did. I'm like, why did he do that? Like, that you're right. That's the one scene where I was just kind of like, that makes no sense.
But I understand him doing it. I do. So I'm not saying it's like a writing flaw, but or a character flaw. It's just like, they could have been like, okay, we will sequester all of these zombies and we'll put them in their smaller walled off area where they can live in peace, and we'll supply them with pig's brains. But instead it's, yeah, wipe them out. And then can we talk about the closing scene? So someone made an interesting point on Amazon that if you like the way this movie ends, then right when the credits start, leave. And if you don't like the way the movie ends, wait 90 seconds into the credits for the bonus scene.
This is about to be a battle.
Like, yeah, it's that bad dude who turns out to be a zombie the whole time, who was a sane zombie, we'll say. Like,
Wickham.
Yeah, a pig brain zombie. The guy from Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
Like, He's now leading a charge on Darcy and Lily's wedding day. And also Jane and what's his name? Bingsley?
Yeah.
When they have dual wedding day, that's the day that the zombie horde is charging with Wiggum in the front. That's the only moment that wasn't just tongue in cheek. Like when they did that, they were like, okay, let's be a little silly. Cause he's got this like crazy wide eyed gaping smile with his sword pointed forward as he's charging on the horse.
There's going to be like, a war coming up.
Like I thought that was really dumb and really funny. It's the only moment in the movie that was silly, like dumb silly. But it was deliberate, and I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't think they're going to do a sequel, but they kind of set it up for one.
Yeah, but I like the way they did it because in my head I'm just picturing like a massive siege now. I liked it. I don't think they're going to do Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters, which was a book. But
I hope they do.
Yeah. But I don't know. This is a weird film for me because I liked it, but I can see how it's not a commercial success. I enjoyed it. But you're like, I like the end. Like those people are dead. Do you think they're gonna live? I don't see the Bennetts and them dying.
We have to believe that they live.
Yeah. I don't think those zombies. I think a lot of people die. Like, that's going to be a battle. I want that movie.
Yeah,
I do like that. So they, in my opinion, they succeeded in making this Victorian alternate history movie. They succeeded in the love story. They succeeded in the zombie movie. They succeeded in all these things. And then as icing on the cake, and I didn't know this from reading the book, they gave a slightly different spin on the zombie turn, and it was a really cool one. Like, so it even contributed that to, like, the horror genre. There are just a handful of movies that have made big changes to the zombie turn. Movies like The Returned and Maggie make it a very, very slow process.
Warm Bodies.
Warm Bodies makes it a reversible process. Return of the Living Dead 3, way back in like 1993 or 94, that made it a very slow, very human-like process through most of the movie. And then this is actually the... out of all those other ones that were just about suppressing the turn or slowing down the turn so there's a grade of humanity, this was the most unique of them all. This was the most unique zombie turn I think I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
And that was just the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
Like, that's really cool. Like, they did a great job.
Yeah, it was fun. It's a weird little movie. And like while writing the review for it, I kept laughing, like the stuff that was coming, you know, that I was writing down. But I liked the turn. I liked the idea of it. I liked the zombies. I liked how they could eat pig brains. I'm happy that they didn't have Diary of the Dead narration.
So here we are as you're going down the road and there's a previous zombie and pig brain. I don't know what I'm going on. It's was sort it of Michael
Caine? Lily is looking at Darcy.
Yeah, so she's looking at him, and it's just like
she likes him.
But there's a zombie, and her sister's sick, so they can't really get into their love stuff. And then
that was just a backfire.
Yeah, backfire. Wait.
It's not a zombie.
Wait, do you hear that?
Is that a fly?
That's nothing. Wait.
If anyone's seen Diary of the Dead, this is funny.
Yeah, so, wait, what's that? It's a horse. That's a horse. Wait, it's a zombie horse. It's just a horse.
Wait, so, so, Lazabeth, you have not gotten to see this yet.
I mean,
now, what was your impression of the trailer?
Well, first off, I want to say I did read the book. So, when I saw a trailer, I had absolutely no interest in watching this movie. Not because I'm a hardcore Jane Austen fan, but I was just like, I don't know. It just, I mean, the trailer looked okay. I mean, from it sounds like, the movie kind of lived up to the trailer. You know, it just didn't sound like it exceeds expectations. It's just like a fun movie. But I just wanted to ask you guys, what was the better adaptation, this movie or the movie with Keira Knightley?
Oh, dude! I mean, I love both of them. I mean, as a film,
what Keira Knightley movie are we talking about?
Pride and Prejudice. It's great.
Oh! I thought you meant like another like movie we've discussed at some point. I was thinking not the Last Witch Hunter.
And like Rosamund Pike, and like that's a great adaptation. Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
that's really good. I remember I was it was another night that I was drunk in Tallahassee, and I went and bought it. That's a sweeping Joe Wright adaptation. Like, I love that version of it. And I mean, it's probably my favorite Jane Austen book. My least favorite is Emma. I've only not finished two books in my life, and one was Emma, and the other one was by Chuck Palahniuk. It was Survivor. So I've only not finished two books in my life. But
I've never opened a Jane Austen book.
Yeah, no, I mean, I whatever, man. Women in lit. There's like two guys in a class, but like I'm like, why? Might as well. There's been a lot of great female authors, like Tennessee Williams, like all that. But Flannery O'Connor. I think the one I would watch more is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
That innately has more rewatchability.
Yeah.
It's like if you were able to check the box that says that you enjoyed it in its lowest form, even if you just enjoyed it, it's more rewatchable than a proper Jane Austen adaptation, even if you loved it.
Yeah. I mean, I wish it would have had Colin Firth because he was in the BBC adaptation of it. But no, they had callbacks. You know, they had callbacks to it. They had callbacks like, you know, the rain. They had a tracking shot that was like Joe Wright's. So like it was very it was self-aware for sure. But no, I the better film is Keira Knightley's one. But the more rewatchable one is the one with zombies.
Nice. Yeah, I was kind of expecting that answer.
I don't know. And then I want to see Pride and Prejudice and Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Like, are they fighting Vin Diesel, or is he just in it being his typical...
He's playing the part of Mr. Collins.
Yeah, he's Mr. Collins.
But he doesn't even try to do a British accent. He just keeps talking like he does in all his movies.
So he's the pastor? Like, he's the parson?
Yeah.
And he's just eating scones and dancing? That sounds amazing. Dude, I want him as... Wait, no, but then Matt Smith can't be it. Well, we'll switch Matt Smith over to Darcy. All right, I like that. No, we'll switch him over to Bingley.
Bingley.
Okay. Yeah, Bingley. Bingley's... Yeah, let him still be cheeky, and then have Vin Diesel just eating scones in the background. I want Vin Diesel versus scones.
I eat these scones a quarter mile at a time.
You have learned about scones. It's impossible to perfect a good scone dunk. Like, there's no way. Like, there's no time. Every scone is different, so you're like one, two, three dunks, and then it breaks off in the coffee, and you're like, no! Sometimes you don't dunk it enough. Like, scone dunking should be an Olympic sport because it's harder than tie diving.
I don't even dunk them. I just eat them. I don't know. Maybe I've been doing it wrong my whole life.
You don't dunk your scones in coffee?
I've never done that.
No.
What?
Listen, man, whenever I'm eating a scone, it's few and far in between. So, man, I don't know.
Go to Starbucks, get a coffee, get a scone, or your local coffee shop because St. Pete's blowing up.
Yeah.
Get a scone, get a coffee, you know, sit there put a beret on.
Yeah.
Get a huge cappuccino as well. Listen to some Nirvana like you're in the 90s and just dunk your scone away.
Listen, I've dunked a biscotti. Like, that's pretty good.
But see, that's easier because it's hard. So it's like
those
harder.
Those things hold together forever.
But scones, they break. It's an art. Like, it's like ice. It's like butter sculpting, dunking a scone. It's damn near impossible.
I guess that's why I've never tried dunking one. It just doesn't seem dunkable.
Yeah, it's tough. Know? But you know what, though? Like,
it's like dunking a cupcake. Like, it didn't really doesn't make a lot of sense.
I spent a year in Alberta, Canada, learning how to dunk scones, and I didn't learn anything.
Studying under the masters.
Yeah.
He dunked the entire scone all at once.
It's like it's a bunch of Canadian elderly women in a sewing circle.
I really hope you guys try to dunk scones coming up because it's miserable.
I just don't know.
I will honestly – hold on. Now, listeners can hold me to this. I will honestly – go out of my way to try and dunk a scone between now and our next week's podcast. And I will give you a report of my, I got to write this down so I don't forget it, but I will give you a report of my scone dunking. I'll do it. I've got a 3-day weekend coming up, so I'll do that. And I got to go to Barnes and Noble to get a gift anyway. And then, but what I want in return is I want you to come back and tell me the three best scone dunkings of film.
Okay.
Which really might be the three only scone dunkings of film if you can find that many. So that's what I want in return. I will give you a critical analysis play-by-play of my scone dunking experience. And I will talk to the people around me and I'll tell you what their reactions are. I'm not – you know I will. You know I will. I'll have fun with this.
Yeah, I'm looking up right now. Scones of Cinema.
Yeah.
I might even record it so that I can show it to you guys before we record the podcast.
I mean, like, scones are something I kind of had to be in the mood for. Like, I'm not always in the mood for a scone. A cookie I can always eat any time of day.
Oh, no, there's a movie called Game of Scones.
Game of Scones.
That might be one of your three.
Yeah, you know what? I think cookies are all-day food.
They are. Cookies, muffins. I can eat those any time of day.
Yeah.
Although I might be in the minority on that.
Let's see. But a scone is only for the evening if it's served with a hot beverage.
I've only had scone in the morning, the few times I've had a scone.
Yeah, Megan, she makes pastries on the weekend, so like, you know, we get scones maybe once a month, and they're delicious, but they're infuriating.
You know what's ridiculous is I'm kind of just now catching the fact that we're still recording as we talk about scones casually.
Wait, there's something called James Earl scones.
Wait, when you give me the top three scones, though, Mark, I want, like, legit movies that people have heard of.
Yeah, yeah, I got
it. All right. Well, before we continue our scone discussion, are there any plugs we should make?
Yeah, stop by Shark Dropper Movies, Films, and Flicks. Head to iTunes, rate and review us. We want to build up that, you know, our rates and reviews. Subscribe, please. Share. Tell everyone how great we are. You know, if you don't like us, don't tell people that. But if you think we're great, do that. And just, you know, check out our back catalog, guys. And, you know, we appreciate you listening. And send us some random questions.
We're coming up on 50 episodes. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Time flies when you're trying to answer listener questions.
When you eat scones.
We're just a couple episodes away from Kurt Russell Mania.
Yeah. It's Kurt Russell Awards.
I mentioned them earlier, but yeah, check out the guys at Critical Role. Like, they probably don't need me plugging them. But no, I've been kind of addicted to them lately. Like, you don't even need to know anything about Dungeons and Dragons. Like, it's a very entertaining show. Check them out. Critical Role, ROLE. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Is it Critical Role, like ROLL, the dice, or it's Critical ROLE?
ROLE.
That's a double entendre because it's role-playing game. They roll the dice.
Yeah. I know. It's worth a watch. But yeah, I think that does it for this week's episode. Well, the non-scone part of the episode, anyway. Yeah.
Hitchcock had scone eating.
Yeah.
Don't you spoil it for me. Don't you cheapen it. I want to be surprised when I get the full play-by-play.
All right. For my...
Beth, rewind that and then delete that, edit it out so that I don't hear that he said that.
I won't. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Write it on a piece of paper and throw it on the floor. Kurt Russell.
John Levingood.
Good night, folks.
And Michael Caine.
Hey, y'all gonna blow the bloody doors off.
Oh, you almost had it. Almost had it. I've been your host, John Lasso. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy your scones.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.